Okay, thanks for joining, everybody. I wanted to talk about something. Obviously, it's on the screen. If you're listening to this on audio, you can't see it, but it's really the subject of this talk is really about a word that's, I feel, is not spoken enough by direct marketers. And I really feel like it's time that we start having this conversation and that more and more people start thinking a slightly different way and start adding this word and really that concept to the to their lexicon and really how they're managing campaigns in their business. And that word really is brand. You know, it's it oftentimes it feels like these are on opposing sides and different camps that people are either direct response or direct marketers or they're brand folks. And you know, it's no longer an either or. It is an and. And I will say that I have a slightly different approach towards brand than I think do other folks. It's not necessarily conflicting, but you know, I think a lot of folks like, let's say, Gary Vee, who's got the jab, 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 right hook, which is, you know, give a ton of value and then go ask for the sale. You know, Ryan Deiss talks about, you know, cost per pixel and, you know, build the relationship and, you know, get people to know the brand and then go ask for it, which is, you know, those two are not that different. And then there's the, you know, traditional brand advertising world where I think it's much more what people think about when they think about brand and especially brand marketers, Madison Avenue, things like that. And I'll say that my my approach towards brand, and I think, frankly, it's a little bit surprising, and I would never have thought of myself as being the guy talking about brand, especially in the way that I am today. And it certainly has evolved over time from the last couple of years since I've left Beachbody, and certainly some of the stuff was happening there. But I think just as time goes on and the world is shifting, I think it's becoming more and more important and obvious, at least for me, that this that these two have to be brought together. And certainly from my perspective, and the reason I think about brand is, you know, ultimately it's about driven from a desire to increase a couple things. One is customer LTV, and the second is really the value of the business overall. So, you know, I come from a quantitative background and certainly from a measurable and measured approach towards things. But that's really ultimately where my where I come from, and it's I think, and I've seen that thinking about brand absolutely has an impact on these, and something I'm going to get into. And really, what I feel like is, you know, that when you build a brand, business with brand in mind, you're building it in a better way, in a more sustainable way. So I was in an event last year where someone said, when you build a business expecting to sell it, the things that you do are different, and frankly, are better. Because you're making decisions knowing that someone's going to come and look under the hood and ask questions and, you know, someone else is going to take it on and things like that. And so the processes, the systems, and frankly, the standards you have in the business are different. And I really feel that building a business with brand in mind is very similar to that. So really, first, like, what is a brand? Let's just make sure we're all on the same page. You know, from one side, it's the premium people are willing to pay for a product relative to the generic brand. So we learned about in business school, but that's also the reality of it. I think you can look certainly at Apple and the iPhone versus the Droid, and you know, it's probably most people would say from a technology side, the Apple is the better product, or is the not as strong a product, but certainly the brand around and the lifestyle and certainly the design around an Apple is part of the premium. It's also brand is a set of values and a perspective. It's what the brand and what a brand and things stand for, but what it's not a logo, and it's not just a tagline. You know, some of the examples I give is it's similar a bit to porn, which is it's hard to describe, but you know it when you see it. So with that in mind, you know, what are the benefits? And so, you know, to thinking about brand and having a brand, and I think it's really all of these things. That it's, you know, it's a higher enterprise value when you sell the business, if and when you want to. You can sell it for more. People value a business that has brands either within it or whether it's a branded house or a house of brands. You definitely get the benefit of word of mouth, especially when we're talking, assuming a positive brand here. Fewer bad reviews, you know, it's a little bit of that. And certainly also hiring. You know, when you have a brand, it makes the hiring process that much easier. And all the other side is when a brand is poor, people really don't want to go oftentimes as much. And this is obviously marginal things. And, you know, people, what they put on Glassdoor is in part about the products and the business and the standards and the brand. So it certainly does play in there. And then, you know, this was my role at Beachbody, and certainly it's absolutely for me the case that brand actually helps in customer acquisition, that, you know, that it has a very real impact. And so if you consider maybe a slight tangent for a second, and I'll come back to this, which is if you consider the idea of income and wealth, that really you need income to generate wealth. And assuming, again, you want to have wealth, and it's not simply that you want to always be in that income generating mode and just spending it and burning through it and really in that, you know, acquisition and everything goes away mode. I'd say there's an analogy between income and wealth and DR and brand. And so you obviously can't generate wealth without income. I would argue that it's, especially when you're first starting out and trying to build a business, and let's say assume you don't have venture capital and you don't have super deep pockets, you have to focus much more on the DR side of the business, because that is about, you know, getting generating cash flow and in a much more rapid manner. But that you have to do that ultimately if you want to build a brand. But a brand can't exist if all you're doing is just hardcore DR and really you're torching the customer. And so being mindful about both of these, that they absolutely can work hand in hand. And frankly, I would argue, why can't they work hand in hand? And so now, if you're really still not convinced of the importance or value of a brand, you know, I've got some logos and images up on here, Tesla, Uber, Howard Stern, Richard Branson. And whether you have a personal connection or not to each of these businesses or people, I think it's hard to argue that they don't have brands and don't have strong brands. And certainly I would just see, like, I'll point out Tesla, you know, Honda and Toyota and all these other cars have been doing electric cars for a while, and the EV1, but Tesla has, you know, is now the car that everyone wants. And that has got a sexiness factor, it's got cachet, and it certainly has a very strong brand, not just with Elon Musk, but with the car itself and the design and all those kinds of things. And they've done a lot that has absolutely affected the brand of Tesla. I'd say the norm, though, with most and many DR marketers is that they're approaching it as generating income at the expense of brand. And so what that shows up in multiple ways, right? Which is, torching the customer. It's making it painful for people to return or cancel or change an order, or, just the experience of buying is painful. And I knew a story of someone who, you know, would basically deliver a product, and, it was obviously a DR marketer who would deliver a product that essentially, once you open the box would basically crumble. But they required people to return the product in the original packaging, and it was almost physically impossible to do so. And so clearly they were just in an offer business and not really wanting to build a brand. And certainly, again, like, there's an assumption here that that to build something sustainable and scalable. And I guess if you're in the, you know, just straight in the offer business and don't want to, you know, have anything that's lasting, then this isn't probably as relevant. But that's also probably guessing people who are listening, that's not really, you're not listening, because if you're in that world, this is not really as relevant for you. You know, I think a lot of people in the DR world also think that brand doesn't apply to them. And partly because it's, you know, this sense of scoffing at Madison Avenue and what people have traditionally thought of as brand and brand advertising. And so I think the irony, though, is with DR folks, is that the idea of it's a direct response, but it's also direct with the consumer. And that's an advantage you have, and you own the customer and you own the relationship and all that. But many folks don't actually care to engage with a customer. And almost the fact of when a customer actually engages or calls or has any kind of communication, it's almost people shudder or they just shy away from it. And I find that a little bit ironic, and certainly that will affect how the brand is perceived and how you can actually either accelerate or not accelerate the sense of that brand. You know, I think also the reality is, though, that the not engaging with the customer and being able to kind of get away with some of the tactics that people have previously is just not as possible. I mean, there are things, it's Amazon reviews, social media, You know, your company sucks, you know, insert your company name, sucks.com, you know, all these kinds of things, scam alerts, the Better Business Bureau. There's too much information now for consumers to be able to access very readily, and people are doing research, especially when it's something, a product and a brand that they're not as familiar with. I think it's harder to get away with it. So I think you can't get away with some of the things that you used to when it was only TV infomercials, just imagine, and there wasn't an internet, it wasn't as easy to gather information about a product and a company as it is today. It's if you're, especially if you're online, it's a tab away to go do a search, right? And the reality too is that, you know, and I certainly see it with my clients, that when, and certainly people I talk to, that, you know, not having a weaker brand or, and certainly not being as focused on it, can affect, you know, conversion rate. It's fewer people telling others to buy. And the other side too, and I think we've all experienced this when we have a negative experience with a brand and a product and a business, is actively, the worst thing really is actively telling people to stay away. I mean, I have a bank and I have a phone company that, you know, I'm really excited about. And I have some that I really, I will actually tell people, do not do anything with those people, with those businesses. And then I have a whole bunch of things that I'm just not, you know, I'm agnostic on, and I don't really care to. But once you've gotten to the point where people are actively telling others to stay away, you know, that's probably the worst level of brand. You know, the concept of brand, I would say, is, you know, some questions are really, is it part of your thinking? Like, how often does the word brand or the topic of it or the concept of it come into your thinking, come into conversation? And most importantly, where does it show up in your actions, right? And so, you know, where does that show up? And really, where do you build the brand? And from my perspective, the answer is everywhere, which at times is daunting. And also just also the reality, I think, of the world we live in, that there are so many places you touch the customer, whether it's, you know, what you're already doing, whether it's pre-purchase, post-purchase, and oftentimes people forget the product. They, you know, there's certainly people feel like you can market a crappier product and sell it, and it's not always the best product that wins. But that being said, to the extent you have a product that is that much better, it just makes things so much easier. And frankly, that's one less thing to be managing and to have as a challenge point for your customers. You know, I think the easiest way to build a brand, I think it's not rocket science. It's really create great products, get them into the hands of the customers, presumably profitably, do as much as possible to take care of your customers. And then, you know, my joke a little bit about extra credit is, if you can create a community so that your customers feel like they're part of something bigger, and amongst like-minded people, other customers, other clients, all that kind of thing. I think all this, but really, at the end of the day, it's not rocket science necessarily, I think, to build a brand. Excuse me. But, you know, let's get a little bit further into, you know, these are some questions I ask folks to see if you actually are brand focused. You know, it's how many MIDs do you have? How many merchant processors do you have? And that's not always an indication of not being brand focused, but it can be, which is if there's a reason why you have to have so many different merchant accounts because of how you treat the customer, of the level of risk, things like that, that might be an indicator of it. Yeah, how many Facebook accounts do you open each month? You know, I know people who are opening, certainly I don't work with these folks, you know, because it just sometimes their practices are a little bit too far over. But if you're opening Facebook ad accounts every month, there's probably a reason you need to do that. Yeah, Facebook can be at times frustrating, and Google can too, but to the extent there's a real reason why you're opening so many Facebook accounts, you know, that might be an indicator. You know, do you feel comfortable telling your mom or your children about your product claims? You know, is it something you talk about, or would you shy away from? You know, if you were interviewed on TV, how concerned would you be that people would walk through your business? The reality, again, is between social media and all these other things, that kind of stuff is happening already. Are your customers proud to wear your t-shirt? And some businesses obviously don't lend themselves towards wearing a t-shirt, but so take it figuratively. You know, do people like to be associated with your products, your business? And then really, when customers meet you in person, how do they react? And when they find out, let's say if you're the CEO or the founder or CMO, how do they react when they meet you? Are they excited, or is it a sense of dread from both sides? I think a few other questions I'd ask, you know, is your sense that most of your customers don't know what they signed up for? You know, is it all fine prints? Is it trying to squeak things through? Is a core part of your model seeing how long you can stay on the credit card? statement until they called to cancel. And it's just literally a breakage model. And you're hoping and you're trying to do your best to make it difficult for people to cancel. And is the idea of sending an email about their next billing or shipment scary? And to this point, I want to kind of show an example from Dollar Shave Club. You know, they obviously just got bought for over $1 billion, which, you know, was great and it's awesome and good for them. But I think there's something they did certain things I thought were really cool when it came to both how they manage continuity, and which I'm going to talk about in a second, and then brand. And in this case, I got an email that basically said my shipment was going to trigger in a few days. And so I was actually getting an alert that they knew it and I knew it, that I was, it gave me an opportunity to cancel. But instead of just making it you're going to be billed in a few days thing, they made it actually into a marketing message. And so they basically said, do you want to toss more in before we, you can add these things before we ship it. And so it wasn't simply a message to allow me to cancel or just to let me know. And that was managing the brand, but they made it into a marketing and a sales opportunity. And I thought that was pretty darn cool. And I'd say, you know, it's a rhetorical question, but you know, is this something you can add to your business? Is this something you feel comfortable with? I like Dollar Shave Club. I signed up intentionally. You know, I got to cancel on and off because of the number of blades I use or I don't use. But ultimately, like, this is a product I like and a service that I like. And every once in a while, I do actually add something to my order. So I thought that was a really interesting way to and a cool way to do it. I also want to be clear about a couple things of what I'm talking about, what it doesn't mean. And it doesn't mean don't sell. You know, being brand focused doesn't mean you don't sell, and it doesn't mean don't push. It doesn't mean don't use upsells. I certainly believe that people have to take personal responsibility. But I also think would say that sneaky offers are like art porn. I think people know it, and so when they see it, and especially from the marketing side, I think people know when they're trying to sneak something through or not. But I'm absolutely a firm believer of, you know, you gotta try to push, but also it's a manner of how hard do you push and what are the tactics and the means that you do use to do so. I want to also take a brief note on continuity, because I think oftentimes it has a strong association with DR marketers. It has a very strong negative association with DR marketers, but really it's another name for subscription. And I'd say that there are plenty of subscription businesses with strong brands. Netflix, Slack, Birchbox, DirecTV, you know, there are plenty of subscription businesses where people are more than happy to have that product or that service hit their credit card every month because they're happy with what they're getting. They feel like it's of value. Now, I will say there are plenty with a bad rep. Certainly the telecom companies somehow seem to be at some of the top of the list. Some of the banks are. But subscription and continuity by itself is not necessarily something that's going to default to a bad brand. I think it's frankly just the manner in which people have managed it. And I would also say that, you know, the reality is that we're all in the subscription business. Even if you don't have a pure subscription product, that may show up as fewer returns, fewer cancels, repeat customers, word of mouth. That for me ultimately is about subscription. It's how long can you keep people buying and coming back and being able to sell them more. And you know, from a mechanical side, it's how many times are you able to hit them with their credit card? And frankly, like, are they excited to do it? Are they happy to do it? You know, we are all in that subscription business. And by the way, we are also all in the brand management business in one form or another. And whether it's at the individual level, certainly as a consultant and things that I do, I'm very much in the brand management business. I have to think about my brand and how I manage it. Certainly the products I've been a part of, my clients, I think about it personally for them, and then they certainly think about it. I'm sure you all do. But at some level or another, we are all in the brand management business, and the world is, just as I think the brand side is becoming much more quantitative and measurable, I think the DR side and the measurable side is realizing that the awareness and thoughtfulness about brand has to be much more pervasive. And certainly that's something I'm clearly arguing for here. And I'd say, like, you know, when you think about certain brands, you know, thinking about the brand of the IM and the internet marketing community versus Amazon and Nordstrom, I think the internet marketing community probably doesn't have the greatest reputation. And when people talk about being an IMer or even a DR marketer or direct response and things like that, I would say that I think there's still stigma associated with them, and in certain cases, rightly so. versus if you imagine, you know, think about the reputation of Amazon and Nordstrom. It's about service. It's about convenience. They have really strong brands, and certainly that's taken time and money. But it also, the contrast for me is actually very real. And, you know, certainly Amazon and Nordstrom from a customer acquisition side and a retention side, that's also very real. So it's had a positive impact, but it wasn't simply just brand advertising. It wasn't simply just put their name and their, it run ads on TV and on Facebook and in print. It was about how do they treat the customer and, you know, what do they deliver the customer, the product, the service, the experience, the, all that kind of stuff. That all affects the brand. And so I'd argue that Amazon and Nordstrom have done phenomenal jobs doing that. Not that they're perfect, but they have done phenomenal jobs on an overall basis. You know, if you think about who else manages their brands really well, I'd say one other bucket of that is the YouTubers. And certainly, again, you see that from the cream rises. But you look, I think it's interesting to look at some other categories of who manages brands, their brands well. And in this case, I'm going to look at a couple people rather than necessarily businesses and products. But there's a now woman, she was started out as a teenager, and really, I think even preteen, Bethany Mota. She has 10 million subscribers on YouTube. And she started out as a teenager really talking and doing some fashion and accessories and home and crafts and all this stuff. And she has now parlayed that into launching a line with Aeropostale. Casey Neistat is probably one of my favorite YouTubers, and honestly, out of a people I've never met, one of my favorite people. He's got probably by now 6 million plus. At this time, it was 5.9 million, but probably is either inching towards it or past 6 million subscribers now. You know, used to do a daily vlog. I think he vlogged for like 500 plus days consecutively. And if you think about what they all have in common, and not that subscriber count is the end all be all, but it's an indicator. And if you think about what these two and certainly the top YouTubers have in common, they've created a connection with their audience, which oftentimes has been the result of engagement. And they have a sense of trust from their audience. And honestly, they're likable, especially when it's the person. And so not everyone is in a personal brand business, and that's fine, but that doesn't mean we can't learn from what some of these folks have done. That as a brand, again, Amazon and Nordstrom, I would argue, have created a connection. There is engagement. I've tweeted to Nordstrom before, and honestly, I was tweeting because I was just so impressed with their service. And again, this costs a lot of money to do it, but I got a response pretty darn quick, and I was very impressed. And trust and likability. And I'd argue that the same things here, you know, about creating a connection, engagement, trust, likability. I'd argue that Amazon and Nordstrom have all of these, and both have all of these. And so whether it's at a personal level and it's video and all those kinds of things, or just how you operate, having some of these things in common, I think certainly can help to build the brand. And so then when you think about, and I think about like what changes if you're actually going to be brand focused, you know, I think if you imagine and operate as if the next sale from the prior customer is crucial to your success, what might you do? How might you approach the way you treat the customer? And how do you engage with them? And not that the customer is always right and the customer is always perfect, but I just think it's an interesting way to approach it. Or imagine if their review was the only one, and what might they say? What might be their experience? Hopefully, we've all seen situations where someone wasn't happy, and you can turn that person into an evangelist by, you know, treating them really well and how you manage things. We're not going to be perfect as individuals or as businesses, but how we manage those commitments, and certainly reviews that talk about the genuine part of something not going right and how a brand and a business made it right and made it better. That goes a long way. And frankly, there's a lot of authenticity associated with that. A couple last points here I want to make. One is, this idea that the golden rule was actually wrong, right? And this, you know, the golden rule is do unto others as you'd have done unto you. I think a business school professor of mine said this best, which is, you know, it's actually not that. It's do unto others as they would prefer to have done unto them. And I think too often, especially as direct response folks, we assume that people want what we want, or we have it fully in our minds of what they want, as opposed to asking them sometimes or giving them options and things like that. And what would they prefer to have done unto them? But again, I really want to reinforce You know, this is not about being unprofitable. It doesn't mean you shouldn't fire some customers. Some customers are a royal pain, and they're frankly costly and on multiple levels. So it's about managing the business, but it's also how you do that and how you engage in some of those conversations. But really what this is about taking care of your customers, right? And so at the end of the day, when I talk about brand and I think about brand, it's about customer experience, customer service. It's about taking care of them. It's about treating them well. And so in closing, what I'd say is, you know, you build the brand every day in every aspect of your business, which again, as I said, that can be daunting, and it could also be an opportunity. And it gives everyone really in an organization or all the touch points the ability to affect it. And it also means you got to be mindful of all those different touch points. But ultimately, you're either building the business or allowing it to deteriorate. I think about this very similar as, you know, health and fitness. It's either you're getting better or you're getting worse. And there are ebbs and flows in that. But ultimately, are you working to make it better? Because these days, there's always someone else out there. The market is too darn efficient, and there's just too much information and too much competition that you always have to be working to and striving to make it better. And ultimately, I feel like, you know, when you are doing that and thinking about brand alongside direct response, the customer values are going to be higher, and the value of your business will be higher. And ultimately, those are those things should hopefully resonate with most folks. And you know, I've seen it so many times, and really that's what was the impetus for this. So thanks everyone for joining. If there are any questions, certainly here's my contact info. You can always get me at buybackazad.com. My LinkedIn's there. Certainly feel free to reach out. But appreciate everyone watching and listening. And that's all. Have a great day. Thanks.